Thank you, Dale. Thank you, worship team. Such good stuff. You know, I like wild, crazy music with the best of them, but sometimes I feel like ending with those slower, older songs are just so rich. So rich and so good. Thank you, Laurie, for picking those ones out. I heard Braden might have helped, so good job, Braden. Oh, okay, well, I didn't think he picked the last one, but I wasn't sure. It didn't feel like Braden. But today we're going to continue our journey. We're going through God's big story and how you fit, and we're trying to take that jet flyover tour through God's big story, starting in Genesis, all the way through the book of Revelation, and it's been a good journey. And today we're going to be kind of continuing a little bit last week. Last week we talked about Judges, and we took a real quick look in what that was like, and you know, what was the need for the judges? What was the cycle that kind of happened with Israel? And today we're going to take a little bit more of a micro look. We're going to look at the book of Ruth, that this account takes place in the midst of Judges. But I think in today's world, what I see so many times is people that are starving for acceptance. They desire to be accepted. Sometimes, sadly, more times than not, we see in probably even our own lives where we've made choices in an effort to be accepted, maybe in a people group, maybe in your friend group, maybe by church. You know, that happens even in a church. We see people kind of, you know, sometimes we'll gravitate towards that. But I was thinking back to a time when I was accepted, when I heard I was accepted. But at that time, I didn't really know what that cost was going to be. We'll see in the account today that Ruth was looking to be kind of accepted, and with that acceptance came a cost. I remember back to when I was a senior in high school and I was looking for a college to go to, and I was looking for, you know, really I thought I wanted to be an engineer. God had other ideas, but he wanted me to take this path because I'm convinced that that thing alone led me primarily to Geneva College, a small Christian college, one of the few that had a really strong engineering program. God knew that I wasn't going there for the engineering degree. He knew I was probably, he was taking me there for the education degree, but then I also met the love of my life there, and my life has never been the same. But when I first was, I was waiting for Geneva to accept me. I kind of felt like I had good enough grades. I was, you know, a solid B student, maybe just a B student, because I would get a C every once in a while for classes I didn't like. A's for the ones I really did, and it always averaged out to a B because that's what I was told I had to have to drive. So that's what I got. So I received this letter in the mail from Geneva, and I was always told by people, you want it to come in a big envelope. The big envelope was usually you've been accepted. Small envelope was maybe, well, I appreciate your time, but no thanks. So I got a big envelope and I was excited and I was accepted to Geneva College. That's what I had worked the last couple years of my life, getting to that point, knowing that that's what I wanted to do. But boy, I didn't quite fully understand the cost of being accepted. Anyone who's gone to college, has kids going to college now, you fully understand that there's a big, big cost. In fact, 20-some years later, I'm still paying for that big cost, but that's another story. There was a cost to being accepted. And I think if you look at your life, you can find something probably in your life that's kind of similar to that. You really didn't know the full cost necessarily of what it was going to cost you to be accepted. So we enter this smaller story happening in the midst of a big story. The book of Ruth, that is right after the book of Judges. I always remember that. I can sing the song that Sue taught me 25, 30 years ago, and I know it's, let me tell you about the truth about the book of Ruth. On the first, yeah, I'll just stop there. You don't want me singing. But that book of Ruth is 4 chapters long, and we're going to take a look at the story, the account that happens in there. And so I'm just going to read the first 2 verses, and we can gain a lot from this. We can understand what's happening, you know, where it's at, and all of those important things. So if you would follow along with me, the book of Ruth, chapter 1, verses 1 through 2, and it says this, "In the days when the judges ruled, and there was a famine in the land, and a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and 2 sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephraites from Bethlehem of Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. All right, so let's stop real quick. We see a couple of things, three important things we want to grasp from this. Remember, when we're reading God's word, we always strive to understand not only the context of that book, but like the context of the bigger story going on. It's really important to grasp that. So a couple of things. Number one, this took place during the time of the judges. So we know this is in that time frame, and we know that it's in that same time that we were looking at last week. And what's really cool is we'll see in this book that even amongst the bigger story of what was happening during the time of the judges, when there was a lot of unfaithfulness going on. You remember last week we talked about that cycle that Israel got in, as they would sin, they would be oppressed, and they would go, oh, I need to repent. They would repent to God. God would raise up a judge, and then there would be deliverance. But what happened when that judge passed away? Well, they kind of just reverted back to number one. And so there's a lot of unfaithfulness. There were certainly times of faithful people in the midst of that, and this account is one of those times. The second is it will take primarily in Bethlehem and Judah, and there's some really cool things about that that tie this all together. And this is, again, that's that part of the Israel, you know, the Bethlehem should sound familiar to you in God's bigger story. In fact, I think one definition for that is like house of bread, so provision, and Bethlehem is kind of that center hold there. But the other thing that happens here is there was a famine. And so we realize that in this account, God uses that famine to see his purpose happen. And so what did the family do? Certainly there was a famine in the land. They heard there might be some good stuff over in Moab, and we'll get into a little bit of why that was a weird place to go for them, kind of a place of oppression as a nation, but that's where they went. I think what's important to pull away from this is realizing that in the midst of life, there's going to be bad things that happen to you. How many can say, yes, I understand that? We're never promised to have an easy life. We're never promised, in fact, we're probably promised the opposite. Jesus, you know, tells his disciples, you're going to be hated because they hate me, and there's going to be persecution. And so even at that point, there was rough things going on. A famine occurs, and we'll see that there's some issues with what Elimelech does, but part of that was important to know that there is a famine going on, but even though in the midst of all that, God is still in control. So if we continue on in the account here, so they've moved, and now in verse 3 it says, now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. So famine drives Elimelech and his family to Moab. Key point there is remembering how much of God's story so far was talking about God bringing his chosen people to this promised land. And so now there's a rough patch, and they decide to kind of short-sightedly maybe, and maybe we need to be fair to Elimelech. I mean, if I'm a father and there's a famine in the land and we're having trouble with getting food, my first inclination probably was going to be to save my family. But maybe Elimelech missed something, or I'm not sure, but he takes and he passes away. And his sons that we know were called Mahlon and Chilion. In verse 4, we see that they were married to Moabite women. So this tells you something here, too, that they were not married before they left. They moved to Moab. They become married. One of them was Orpah, not to be confused with Oprah. Orpah, and the other was Ruth. And after they had lived there about 10 years, in verse 5, we see that both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And Naomi was left with her two sons, or two daughters, excuse me, they were dead. Her husband and her sons were passed away. So Elimelech takes his family there. His kids marry foreign women. They both pass away. And now you have a woman in those cultures, which she would have had trouble because why? She was in a foreign land and she had daughters-in-law and that was it. And that would have been a really tough time for her. So what does Naomi do? She realizes in verse 6 that there's some prosperity. God has, in fact, brought aid to his people. So when she heard in Moab, verse 6, that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing for them, Naomi and her daughters-in-law prepared to return from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. So Naomi's like, makes sense. I'm going to go back to my family. I'm going to go back to where I was. My daughters-in-law are going to follow me. But partway through, she's kind of having this concern, and she realizes that her daughters-in-law, so let me just give you a little bit of information here. So if a family, if there was brothers and they one of them passed away, it was kind of the right thing to do, that was part of their law, that they would take, the other brother would take that wife in, make part of the family, and that would be a way of providing for that family. And that was kind of what God's idea was, as he was making a way for this provision. The problem was with these folks is both of the brothers were dead, and the mother didn't have another son. And so what are they going to do? So Naomi sees this and says, no, you should go back. Because to her, she's thinking, okay, I'm going back to my homeland. These two ladies, you should stay here in your homeland and go back to your mother's house, and surely they'll take you in, and you know they'll provide for you. This is would have been a really difficult situation, because they would have had no way to earn anything, to bring anything in without other folks. And so Naomi tries to do this, and Orpah says, okay, you know, she decides to stay. But we pick up this account here, and we start to learn a little bit about this woman, Ruth. If we fast forward a little bit to verse 14. Verse 14 picks this up in chapter 1 and says, as they wept again, so she's convinced her, then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. Verse 15, look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. And I've got a little note in my Bible. This has actually been the third time that she's trying to tell her, look, you really should go back. It's what's best for you. But in verse 16, but Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if anything but death separates you from me. In verse 18, when Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. There's so much in there that we just don't have time to get into too deeply, but understand this, is Ruth is clearly seen something. Naomi must have lived in a way to know that her God was a big God, because Ruth grew up in Moab as a Moabite, and there was clearly other gods and other things that were going on there. We read that in Judges, and she realizes, no, I'm going to stay with this woman. Wherever you go, I will go, and where your God will be my God. I think Naomi's faith must have been lived out. See, even in the midst of tragedy, there was clearly a message that she was giving off, a faith in her God, that even though she might not have felt like it, as we read in verse 20 and 21, she in fact is a very depressed person, and who wouldn't be? There was still something about her life that stuck out to Ruth, and Ruth made that connection. So they go back home to Bethlehem. They arrive there. Family welcomes them. And so there is this connection immediately made. And so the rest of the book of Ruth tells us this story, this account of how a foreign woman, Ruth, left her land and is a land and really a widow that has no way to provide for herself, how God used this situation. So Ruth meets Boaz. In chapter 2, we see this account play out, and I'll read a few of these verses at the beginning just to kind of help set our scene here. In chapter 2, verse 1, it says, now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone whose eye I find favor. Naomi said to her, go ahead, my daughter. So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. Now, let me stop there. I love that verse. Number one, glean, just so we understand what that means, is this would have been the way when they would harvest. They didn't have fancy machines like they have now. And if any fall by the wayside, those that were in need, in this case, widows, would have come by and gleaned some of that grain and been able to use that for their own food. It was kind of built into the system, if you will. Maybe a little bit more well and fair than our welfare system. But it was a way that God had built that into his economy to help provide for them. So Naomi instructs Ruth to do that. She goes out and does that. And then one of my favorite verses, in the middle of chapter 3, verse 3, we see this phrase, as it turned out. It sounds like it was an accident, right? That Ruth just happened to be in the field of Boaz. And we know that that's not how God works. God is not a God of accidents. God led her there, and she made her way there, and she began to glean there. In verse 4, just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of the harvesters, who's that young woman? Whose young woman is that? Excuse me. The foreman replied, she is a Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She went into the field and has worked steadily there from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field. Don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you, and whenever you are thirsty, go and drink from the water jars the men have filled. So we see Ruth, who ended up in the field of Boaz, and she's gleaning like expected, and Boaz comes onto the scene, and if we're careful, we'd rush right by his interaction with his workers. It's very clear that Boaz had a very good standing with his workers. They addressed him right away. He said something positive. They said something positive back to him. So there was a strong connection, and he knows his people, and he sees somebody else there who's not normally there. And he recognizes her and says, whose woman is that? Who does she belong to? Because obviously she's gleaning on the field, so that means she's one that's in need. And he kind of makes that connection and goes over to her and says, you keep coming back to this field. You have protection here. I just love how God weaves these two stories together. Ruth most certainly understood that she was a foreigner in a foreign land. She most certainly understood that she was a widow living with another widow who was just trying to get by the next day. She certainly had a lot of issues for her to overcome in her life. And God brings her to the field of Boaz. Ruth, I believe, even thinking about this idea of leaving her homeland and coming to the new city, she risked rejection. She was a Moabite. Keep in mind, if you remember from last week, the Moabites were one of the people groups that oppressed the Jewish people for 18 years, in fact, and so there wouldn't have been a lot of love lost there. She wouldn't have, just by being from Moab, would have been a couple of strikes against her. Being a female in those times certainly would have been more, and now she's with another female as her mother-in-law, and so this would have been a challenge for her. But in verse 10 and through 12, we see that Ruth exclaimed, why have you found such favor in me? In verse 11, Boaz replies, I have been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland, and you came to live with a people you did not know. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So Ruth took this chance, and she goes with Naomi. She has no idea what's going on. She's kind of trusting Naomi because in her God because of Naomi's relationship, and she ends up in this field and finds this man who's a very well-to-do man, a very rich man, and he accepts her with open arms for who she is. See, Boaz certainly goes the extra mile here. He realizes who she is, he knows her story, and he realizes who Naomi is and how what the connection is there. It's very clear that Boaz was an honorable man. We see that in his interaction, and we see that in the rest of this account. But he realizes through all of this, the process is going to go even one more step, really, one big step, than gleaning. And in the end, if we would follow this story along in chapter 3, we see that once Ruth goes back to Naomi and tells her exactly where she ended up, Naomi realizes something, that Boaz isn't just some really nice rich dude who's letting her stay there. Boaz is actually in the family line, right? She told her to go there, go to this field, end up there, and that's who he is, and he's going to take care of you. But introducing this idea, something called a kinsman redeemer. If you would read in Deuteronomy chapter 25 and a couple other places, this is mentioned, but essentially a kinsman redeemer was somebody in that family line. Remember, Naomi's husband passed away. She had nobody else. And so there was somebody else in that family that was to then basically come in and marry her, take care of that family in some way. And so Naomi's telling her this, and you should go and see, and she kind of hatches this plan, if you will, to say, yes, he is in your line. He is in the line that would be our kinsman redeemer. In fact, you should go and meet him where he's at during the harvest and just let him know, you know, that you're wanting him to be that kinsman redeemer. Well, Boaz, I mentioned, was an honorable man, and he took great steps to make sure that things were all done honorably. And one of those things was, is Boaz knew that there was someone that was closer in line than he. In other words, he would have been number two. There was somebody else that should be that kinsman redeemer if they knew what was going on. So Boaz says, all right, I will talk to this guy, and if this guy doesn't, if he takes you, then he will be your kinsman redeemer. He will take you in as their family, and he will take care of you and provide for you. But if he doesn't, I will, in fact, step up and do that. So throughout that chapter, we see this plan happening. This plan of a kinsman redeemer is unleashed. So Ruth goes and meets Boaz. Boaz then realizes, no, there's someone else I have to see first. And he addresses this one issue. So he goes to the city, as you read in here, the city gates, and this is kind of like the McDonald's of the day, right? The old guys go to McDonald's and they settle all the world's problems. No, not exactly, but he went to the city gates and there was other men around, and so he gathered the city officials, the city townspeople that were probably the ruling class. They were in charge. They were the ones that helped make the decisions, and he kind of figured out what was going on, and he invited the man who he knew to be that kinsman redeemer to this meeting and said, this is what's happening. Here's what the law says, what God's word says, what you should do. I just want you to know that this is here. And so at first the guy says, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah, I'll do that. Well, then Boaz goes, oh, but by the way, there's this daughter-in-law, there's this land and all of that. And, you know, it really requires marrying this younger woman to prolong the family life, because that's the family line. That's just what they did to help prolong that or to make that happen. And suddenly he realizes, ooh, I got to bring another woman into my clan, and that, well, let's just say that could cause some problems. That could cause some issues. It would be a challenge. He should have been the one to redeem her. He should have been the one to welcome this family in, but he realized that there was a cost. There was a big cost. And there was one where he said, no, I don't think I can do that, because not only will I gain the land, but then when I welcome the woman in, and the first son continues in that family line and is enlightened to some of his inheritance. And so that's really where the rubber meets the road. And he says, no. So what does Boaz do? Boaz says, I will redeem her. Boaz, keep in mind, would have had the same risks. He would have had the same costs. Inviting her in, he had a great inheritance, most likely, and so inviting him in and kind of dividing that, if you will, even ever so slightly, would have been a major cost to him. But he chose to accept the cost of that kinsman Redeemer. He chose to accept this family in. Yes, he was following what God's law was, but clearly there was a choice. And so Boaz's character continues to reign out. Well, sure enough, he redeems her. They get married, Ruth, and they have a child. They have a son whose name was Obed. Obed went on to have a son named Jesse. Jesse, you may have heard of, had a son named David. Oh, by the way, Boaz was descendant from, you remember Rahab, the prostitute who ended up being saved because she put her faith in God, descended from there. And oh, by the way, Ruth was a foreign woman, so not in that line yet. They come together. God took those two faithful women who most definitely had the same kind of problems we have in our life. They weren't perfect, but God brought those two together through Boaz with Ruth, who were the great-grandparents of the King David. Ruth's name also appears in the genealogy of Jesus. Remember Boaz being a descendant of Rahab, by the way, who was also in the line of Jesus. And in a time where there was great darkness in the history of Israel, faithful people served the Lord God, and God continued to work. There is no surprises in this world to God. He's aware of everything that's going on. He's sovereign over everything, and he is indeed working out his perfect will throughout all of eternity. And I don't know about you, but sometimes we look at life and we feel like life's going off the rails. And in America, it feels like it's off the rails. But if we're students of history, we can see that these kind of things have happened before. It's kind of a familiar life cycle in a country or in a dynasty, if you will, a country that goes on and on. There's certain things that happen throughout, and we're kind of in some of those tail end of things where a lot of times previous countries or previous kingdoms have failed. You think of Rome. They got to that point where they were kind of fat, dumb, and happy, and they weren't realizing what was going on in the rest of the world, and they were conquered. But God is in the midst of everything that's going on. He's working in our lives, and I believe today that some of you are going through some challenging, deep water. Some of you may be going through something that is difficult. I don't know what it is, but God does. I hope that this gives you a message of hope, that God is working in amidst the big things, but also the small things in our life. So my application is kind of twofold for you today. There's many takeaways, and I encourage you to dive into the book of Ruth and read it more than once. It's a wonderful book that you can glean so much from. But I want to focus in on a man today, the man that doesn't always get focused in on, but maybe should be more, Boaz. Boaz, in a time of need, took in a foreigner that he didn't have to take in, at great expense probably to himself, certainly a challenge, and he provided for her needs. Now I know that this was part of God's law and he should have been doing it, but I don't know about you, but there's a lot of things in God's law that we should be doing that we don't always do either. Sometimes we err on the side of bad, and that happens, it's sin. But Boaz was making an intentional choice to be faithful to what God was calling him to. In today's world, even in the very city of Alliance, there is an epidemic, I would call it, that kind of flies under the radar. And this is an epidemic of homelessness. Folks that are down and out for various reasons, that may be a foreigner, that have found themselves in Alliance, Ohio, because they were just kind of hopping along. Maybe trying to get to Canton, I don't know, maybe trying to get to Cleveland, who knows. But I've never realized how much of a thoroughfare Alliance kind of is in this area. It's the reason why they put in a Myers, they're putting in a Chick-fil-A. I mean, they're putting in these things for a reason. There's a lot of people coming through. But with a lot of people coming through, a lot of people's problems and what they're dealing with come with them. I got connected with a group, Clothed in Righteousness, Eva and Mike. I remembered the whole day. Be proud of me. I'm 47. Be easy. I got to meet them. I heard about this amazing ministry that was going on down at Main Street here in Alliance. And since that time, sadly, it's been almost a year since I've been able to get them in here. But since that time, it's even exploded more. I mean, it feels like every day I'm reading on Facebook another part of that ministry that's kind of exploding. People that understand that homeless people, number one, need Jesus. And number two, are really not that much different from you and me, except for a few happenstances, perhaps, that got them down and out. And so I've asked them to come and share briefly with us about their ministry. I have a quick video I'm going to show in just a minute to kind of introduce you to this ministry and just try to give you a snapshot of what they're doing down there. And then they're going to share with us to close out the service, and then they're going to be staying with us afterwards, and I hope that you stay and connect with them. So let's watch this video. I'm going to hand the mic over to them and let them share with you.
Hi, everyone. I don't know what it is. When I watch that video, I start crying. I'm like, man, that's good. Anyways, it just kind of puts together what we do. We are Mike and Eva. From Clothed in Righteousness. We started in the homeless ministry 11 years ago. And we fell in love instantly with the homeless community. I'll just share our mission statement real quick. We are a homeless outreach ministry dedicated to building relationships, number one, and meeting the needs of the homeless community. Our beliefs are Matthew 25, 35 through 36, for I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, you welcomed me in. I was naked, you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. And I was in prison and you came to me. We call ourselves a homeless ministry, but we actually serve the whole community with clothes and food and hygiene and a hot meal. The people that we serve, because our focus is on the homeless, people don't understand that homelessness is not just staying in a tent or staying at a shelter, but it's also those that couch surf. They are staying wherever there's a place that they can rest for a bit, living in their vehicle. We have quite a few families right now in Alliance that are living in their vehicles, and they are younger. We're seeing an influx of younger couples coming in. 2 years ago, if you would have talked to me, we were seeing a lot of 70 and 80 year old homeless people. Should not be homeless when you're 70 and 80. But this year we are seeing an increase in the younger, I would say 20 something coming in. And we've made some changes in our ministry so we can focus more on the homeless, and I'm glad God kind of directed us at the beginning of the year to do so, because he was preparing us. We are seeing now 2 to 9 new homeless every single night that we're open. And a lot of new faces. And it's like God is preparing us for the next wave, you know, because if you know, as inflation increases, as rent increases, we're seeing more of the homeless. We have many of them that come to us. Maybe they have a house, maybe they're renting, but they can't afford utilities. They can't afford food. It's expensive. $1,000 to rent an apartment, that's a lot of money if you're only receiving $900 and maybe disability. So where do you make that up at? So, and what people don't understand too about homelessness and how do they get to this point, it's mental illness, childhood trauma. It covered the little ears, but a lot of them are sexually abused as a child, men and women, by family members, by someone outside of the family, and then they don't receive the therapy that they need. Addiction is prevalent, but you got to understand, to get to addiction, you have to have mental illness or trauma. Not many of them go, oh, I want to be an addict someday. You know, there are things that happen, bad choices, you know. I am guilty. I've made quite a few bad choices. Loss of family. I had last year, last fall, an 18-year-old come in sobbing because she lost her dad 3 months ago, and now she's homeless, living out of a car that her dad gave her. I cried that day, by the way, because that was very hard. Loss of a job. Felons. Yes, we've taken those felons. Man, we love them. You know, they made some bad decisions, but they're beautiful people once you get to know them. Domestic violence, very prevalent. And they go back to it if they don't get the help that they need. And sickness, we have few ones fighting leukemia right now, you know, but they don't get the services we get. They don't get the health insurance we get. Since we opened in 2022, we served 1,253 people. 50% of those were homeless. Last year, we served 9,843 people. That's a big jump. And this year, we're already at 8,638 that we have served. We don't always see the same homeless coming in. They kind of rotate in and out. We are still averaging about 50%. Our numbers are dropped, but the numbers that have dropped are the housed community, because we've had to make adjustments so we can continue to serve. So our homeless numbers are going up. We're still serving 100 people a night that we're open. But the nice thing is, by making those changes that we made, our homeless community now stays and dines with us. Before, we were serving 150 to 177 a night, and our homeless community would come in, get their food, leave right away. Social anxiety is very prevalent in the homeless community. So we made a lot of changes. We simplified stuff. We made it that no longer a big fancy hot meal, but we're doing sandwiches. So those people that are coming just for a free meal are no longer coming. And it's great when you get to sit down, you get to talk to them, you get to know them, you get to love them, you get to hear their story, because believe me, they will share their story. And then God had us, and it had been on our hearts for a while, to do a Bible study. So now we have a Bible study every single Tuesday from 5 to 7, and they're coming. We're serving 11 to 15 a night, and they are mostly homeless that are coming in. And you're like, oh, it's only 11 to 15, but that's 11 to 15 people that didn't know Jesus before that. We have Jesus movie night every single Wednesday, and we're seeing 20 people come in just to sit and watch a movie, and they are Jesus-focused movies. And it's planting seeds. You know, you're ministering to them through resources that we have, and it's wonderful. We had a youth group. We're kind of putting it to the side because school's starting, but she was able to minister to those that are in those tough situations. You know, we've had a few that the children have been abused, so you're trying to form those relationships with them because you don't want them to be the next addict, the next one with the mental illness, or the next one that's homeless. I'm trying to keep it as simple as I can, but we're asking for you to join us in this ministry. You know, this ministry is funded by God. We don't get any government grants. Very rarely do we get support from a business, except for Myers. Myers was awesome, came in, visited. We didn't even reach out to them. They came to us and loved what we were doing. But we need your help. We need your help by praying for us, because this is tough. It's emotionally hard. It's 7 days a week. Him and I work full-time jobs, and it's exhausting. We need you to cook a meal. I mean, if you want to cook for 50 people, that's fine. If you want to cook for 150, that's fine too. Prepare a dessert for us. They don't always get dessert every night, but it's a treat when they do. Supply us with food. We'll give you a list of what we need, and help us in that way. If you'd love to sew, we need you. We take t-shirts, recycle them into food bags, and then quilts. Sew them into quilts for them. And we need all your old t-shirts. I don't care if they have a stain, I want your t-shirts. We need your clothes. Men, go through your closet. We need your clothes. Okay, we serve a lot of homeless men, and we go through a lot of clothes. And our ladies have been shopping at garage sales because we just haven't had enough clothes for the men coming in. And we know why. You wear them out. That's okay. We understand. You're not like us women to go shopping all the time. and there's other ways and avenues. Save your hygiene when you go on vacation. Save your travel size hygiene. We use it. We hand it out. About 50 people every Monday and Thursday come through the clothing closet. Many times they're grabbing hygiene. So that's 100 people a week that are getting clothes. And if you come and visit, come and see what we do every Monday and Thursday. Just come in and stand and watch. See who we serve. Walk through the clothing closet. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful boutique. Everything we do has to be beautiful. But these are ways that you can be the hands and feet of Jesus. And if you'd love to be around people, come hang out. We need people that want to sit and eat with them. We need personal shoppers that help them shop. We have a sofa up front. We say if they're going through a tough time, stop, sit, talk with them. You don't have to necessarily minister to them. You can listen to them, you know. And then if they like, hey, can you pray for me? Open door. You know, they get to know you and their family. To me, their family. I know just about every single one that comes in. And I'll hug them and I love them. And I'm not a hugger and I'm an introvert, but I love them. So these are ways that you can help us help them. So I hope I touched on everything. So if you want to stop and talk to Mike and talk with Mike and I after the service, please do. We have an incredible story. So